I mean, the drugs had a hold on me for years, Ethan. The years.
I love it.
I know you do. Yeah, you would mainline it if you could.
I have no issue with it.
Frankly, I have been mainlining it for so long, I don't think I know a normal without it. Which hence the grand experiment.
Yeah, I mean, so I, most of the time will work out every day, so I don't feel like it's really like that bad, right? So it's like, pre-workout without the sugar garbage.
And the special chems that make your skin itch like there's ants.
Right, and like steal all your tea.
Most your teeth.
No, tea.
Oh,
testosterone.
I thought you said teeth.
No.
There are other drugs that will, in fact, do that for you.
Right.
If you out there are looking for a drug that, if you feel like teeth are a burden on your mouth,
just drink Coke.
Just drink Coke or try meth. I don't know. Either are good. Okay, I'm gonna clap you up this time.
Welcome back to class, everybody. I am your host, Ethan.
And I'm your caffeine weaning professor, Ricky. It's been like day three. I've been doing like a cup and a half, which before I was like literally boofing energy drinks left and right. Just the absolute.
I did notice that, but I drink so much coffee that I wasn't going to be like, hey, I think your heart might explode.
Well, it's funny because I was watching what sparked this was there's this that case going around. We talked about it a little bit off mic of the Panera bread girl. The charged lemonade thing. And the FDA recommendation for like the top end for adults is like just under 400 milligrams of caffeine. And I'm like, there are certainly days I've gone over that. And
definitely.
I'm like, holy shit. Maybe I want to dial back. So the grand experiment being I'm trying to not completely cold turkey because this headache fucking sucks. And I imagine if I truly cold turkey, I'll just kill. Like my head will explode. This feels what it's going to feel like. But I'm hoping that I want to get to a place where like one stout, one of our tall boys will get me just zooted. That will get me just zonked. And that'll be great if I get to that caffeine sensitivity again. Because, I mean, the first time I ever had caffeine was, like, college calc. And I was just, I had never really drank it before that senior year. And then I got, because I was just dead and I had 830 calc, I got the largest hazelnut coffee black by necessity that Einstein's Bagels had ever had. And when I drank it for those 45 minutes, I was math. I didn't just understand calculus. I became numbers. All of them. I was math.
It was like before you were living in the matrix and then you are outside of the matrix looking at all those little numbers falling down in green patterns.
Yeah, I started to believe. Right. And I...
You're the chosen one.
That professor was cool though. He did. I'm pretty sure he like gave me just the prerequisite like B- for my major to get me through that class because I was not very good at Calc 2 because I would do something called not fucking practice.
Calc 2 was just hard.
It was pretty hard, yeah. But it was
I went to
like major.
a satellite campus from a different school to do my Calc 2 because it was such a weed out course where I went.
You like scuttled away to a different campus to get it done.
100%.
To me, that's just good strategy. Exactly. That's just a great strategy.
And I believe it or not, also started drinking caffeine. Then I hated coffee before college, and then after, I really like it. But I think it's also like a taste bud change thing when you get older too.
Oh yeah, I really like the stuff we have over there, like blending my own and like French pressing it. Like I appreciate coffee like way like more. Before it was like dirty bean water fuel to just get me to focus. And now I'm like, oh, these notes.
Right.
These soft tones of vanilla. What the fuck, El Salvador? Keep giving me that good shit, dude.
Oh my God, somebody was crying above this bean plant.
Yes, this was, I could taste the sulfur on the volcano this was grown on. But yeah, it'll be a very interesting, you know, journey. But speaking of journey.
All right, fair enough.
Thanks, man.
I'll give you that.
And I will take that. Today, we're talking about a show that is truly the talk of the season, the talk of the town. And I think that there is a part of us that like sometimes wanted to wait until a show is either on a break as they truly finish their core or double core But lately, we've been getting into shows that I think are noteworthy and people are like talking about it. And now that this show has gone through a single core's worth of stuff and is still ongoing, and it's, in my opinion, there may be nitpicks, there may be gripes of the show, but it truly can be an anime of the year contender, I'm thinking. I don't know if you agree, but I think it's going to play well with critics. It's hugely popular amongst the community. I think it has definitely a seat at the table, you know. At the end of the day, it's a fantastic high fantasy show, and I'm not even going to tee it off. Today, we're talking about Frieren Beyond Journey's End, a 2023 Madhouse joint that looks as good as the studio's reputation perceives it to be. So, first thoughts.
Yeah, so this one is interesting. It is a what I would characterize as almost like a slice of life in a fantasy world.
Yeah.
But slice of life of like a previously goated baddie.
Yeah, essentially. And when you say slice of life, I think it's not necessarily the slice part that's the interesting part here. It's the life that we're slicing.
Yeah, so it is. We've actually talked about a very similar topic that this show really delves deeply into. We were talking about vampires at one point and whether we would want to live forever or like have a near immortal life, right?
Yeah.
And weirdly enough, and maybe not that weird, it's probably not that high-minded, we thought of similar scenarios to what our main character Frieren is going through, where like at a certain point, you've lived so long, you've seen, you know, empires rise and fall, you've met people that you like were around for a while who grew old and died, and she's in a similar scenario. So in the very first couple of episodes, you're kind of in this situation where Frieren has beaten the Demon King with her party.
Yeah, we are in New Game Plus at this point. Like, she's already gone the right. full... She's already like 100% completionist the first run.
Right.
She's got it down.
And so the heroes party splits up and they're basically like, well, come back and hang out with everybody again. We'll meet up in 50 years at the next point that this like astronomical scenario occurs. It's like a it seemed like to just be a meteor shower.
Yeah, it's just like a really awesome meteor shower, like a Halley's Comet situation.
Exactly like a Halley's Comet situation that happens every, I guess, 50 years.
Yeah.
And so what's really interesting about this is to our main character, Frieren, she's an elf. So, of course, she's long-lived and loved by mana, as all elves in anime are.
That's how it goes. If you're an elf, you love by mana, and mana loves you back. That's how it is.
But she thinks in... like hundreds of years, less so than like, you know, like 50-year periods are really short in her. She said basically like, oh, I'll see you soon. And they're like, 50 years is gonna be like near the end of my life, dog.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll be bouncing around in this kind of this show a little bit to talk about it, because like there is a scene later, because we're talking about Frieren as a character and kind of the grounding element of the entire narrative. We see an elf later, which we'll talk about why that's actually a unique thing, that looks notably older than Frieren, right? Kraft, his name was, and he looks notably older, and he said, oh, you're still young. I used to think like you, too. So the lifespan, and Frieren's been around for well over 1,000 years at this point, and she looks very young. Like, I think in, like, late teens kind of thing.
Maybe even mid-teens.
Maybe even mid-teens look. But, I mean, like, that's... So, that's the kind of the context for setting the stage of the timeline of this show. You get the perspective of an immortal being in a way I think even shows, like, To Your Eternity didn't quite get as right as this show does. When you're talking and portraying about an immortal character of this nature, this show may be a masterclass in getting yourself into the mind and the reaction of someone who has been on this world plane for over a millennia. And it's beautiful at times and it's sad at times, like how little she cares. It's not about her not caring. It's like, as you said, right? 50 years, it's chump change. A couple months in our lives to her is 5 decades. And she'll even say like 10 years, it's like measly, literally measly.
Yeah, so it is very interesting, certainly. In the first episode, I thought was the most emotionally charged.
Yeah.
Because it really shows like a large swath of time passing very quickly to our eyes. And of course, to her, it was like they had just seen each other recently. And she comes back for the 50-year reunion, and they're like all old as fuck.
They're all ancient, yeah.
Right, and so it's like, it's just really, I think, very abrupt for the viewer, and it's supposed to be, obviously, but it is very emotionally charging to see these like basically young kids at when they left each other.
Yeah.
And they come back and they're like, you know, old, decrepit, bald, you know.
and like I said, that might be one of the elements here why I think this show does these large swaths of time better than others might, is kind of to that point, right? We may call something like that a pacing problem in another show, but this worked to great effect to show you the way that Frerin perceives time, right? We saw 50 plus years in a single episode. To her, that must be what it feels like. Like literally, like she literally, there's that scene right after they had split up. She had went her separate way. You saw the seasons pass. You saw her heckling in a particular store. And then she had just like left. And 3 minutes later in runtime, she comes back to that same store. And it's like, do you guys still have that dragon skull that was on the wall? No, we haven't had dragons around here in like 35 years. And we're like, oh, shit. Like that's what it must feel like to her. Like, I'll just pop back by in a couple decades. No biggie. NBD, NBD. And I love the way that they showed that, because it was a very nuanced take of this character. On its face, feels very apathetic to everything around her, right? And I don't think that is, some of people interpret that as her being cold. You know, some characters are called her that because
of
this.
I think it's like another piece of the puzzle that we talked about, is if you're on this world for even over more like over 200 years.
Sure, yeah.
The trifles of like everyday life seem so small and unnecessary.
So humdrum.
Right. Yeah. And so when you're in this situation, it would probably be pretty easy to look at things as like very, that does not matter whatsoever. Like when I wake up does not matter. Right.
Yeah.
And so like there's certain aspects like that I think they do really well, is they show like she doesn't get out of bed early. She doesn't, you know, do anything she doesn't really want to do at any point.
Because, I mean, right, what's the sense of urgency? There is no sense of urgency for her. And we'll talk about more on a grander scale on how the show writes scenarios and her character, about how that works. But just up top, right, she, even after they had successfully killed the Demon Lord and they're all just like drinking, having a good time, the main party hero, Himmel, says, are you gonna, what are you gonna do after this, Frerin? Are you gonna like take an apprentice? What are you gonna do? I think that's dumb. Well, like, why? Because anyone I teach it to would just die anyway. And it's like, that's not how relationships work. No, it very much is. Like, it very much is how that works.
Yeah, I do think it is very interesting, because the whole story is sort of made out to be like, how do we teach Frerin what life is like as a human? But there's never really that reciprocation. Like, the rest of the people don't really think about what it's like for her.
You know what's funny? I semi-disagree, because her
dare you?
how her party always seems to interact with her is that they've already accepted how she sees things. If you notice, like, Heater and Eisen basically have sometimes said in their flashbacks, like, the world must just seem like, that's just must see how she sees the world. I get it. This must seem like nothing to you. And she's kind of like, I guess you're kind of right. Like, I think it's funny, because everyone around her, at least the ones that got close to her in her past, seem to keenly understand her predicament, to the point where it's like, we all accept your timeline the way it is. And it's her that isn't really kind of grasping the fragility and the frankness of human life. That's kind of the nexus point of the end of the first episode, where when she comes back for Himmel's funeral, that she finally, up to that point, stone face, cold, nothing behind the eyes, just like there out of respect. But she then kind of breaks down and realizes, like, oh fuck, those 10 years meant nothing to me, but in terms of like my life, but I didn't get to know this person at all. So she's kind of on this other side, unspoken journey of trying to like better understand humans, which I kind of like.
Yeah. So for perspective, it was like 1/7 of one of her party members' lives, but it's like
not even 1/100 of right. hers.
So it's like very, very different time scales. And it's hard probably for her to reframe her perspective. But I feel like the onus isn't entirely on her. This is where I was going to go with this, is like they were together for 10 fucking years. They should have realized, like, okay, she's thinking in like thousands of years, not, you know, 10. Let's maybe figure out a way to get her involved. And they do that. At plenty of times they try to do that. And really the whole rest of the show is they're like the plans that the Heroes Party made to try to get her kind of reintegrated in society through the years after they're gone. That's kind of what the whole show is kind of about.
Yeah.
But I do think, like, and this could be an incredibly hot take, but I almost view her as like, if you wanted to make an allegory to what like someone in real life would think, I kind of almost feel like she had like a low version of autism, where like her brain just does not work like their brains.
I would say so, some serious neurodivergency for sure.
Like, right. And so I almost felt like this was like a better show than it thought it would be, based on if you were to put your head in that kind of space.
You know, looking back, I can kind of see that take. Like, the complete kind of disinterest, the hyperfixation on certain hobbies. There is an Asperger's allegory to maybe draw here, I would say. And I don't know if...
Well, because like even what you talked about, the funeral, everyone's like, wow, you'd think that she'd be crying a lot more. She just does not experience
that kind of emotional palette.
Things in the same way, because right. She does cry after that when right. She really like gets her shit kind of spun up.
Yeah.
But I just think it's a very interesting allegory to like a real life scenario. If you wanted to like think about how could I frame this show as something that is realistic, or how can I frame this in a way that gets me thinking about deeper concepts? I think shows like this are really important for the anime space, because like not all of us are well adjusted, you know, anime watchers. And so being able to kind of, I think, have that empathy toward people who are in a similar scenario as Freyrin in real life, yeah. I think is important.
And weirdly, like, now that I'm kind of like, because I just finished the back half this afternoon, like, you have a really good point, actually, because there are a lot of situations that the way that Fran and even Stark kind of operate with her is kind of an interesting, I don't even think that this was the show's intention, but it's just written so well that it could be an interesting blueprint for someone to deal positively and empathetically with someone with some level of neurodivergency. So that, you know what? Fucking wrinkle points, man. That's a swing and a hit, dude. That's good.
Yeah, you know, I try to psychoanalyze every anime character.
We literally can't turn it off. But
well, because the other thing is, like, they do show that she essentially does not take care of herself.
That's part of it too,
right?
Yeah,
she
yeah.
will not wake up on time. She doesn't like do her laundry. She doesn't clean her room. It's very much what you said. She's hyper fixated on like her goal,
yeah,
and everything else falls by the wayside. But unfortunately, that's also exacerbated by the fact that she thinks in hundreds of year spans versus days.
Yeah, and I almost think that too. I think what they were actually going for, which I think there's an interesting real world parallel sometimes to draw here, is the inner machinations of someone who is maybe approaching savant levels of intelligence. Is that she?
Yeah, I felt like that a couple times.
She's been called a genius by people who live at similar timetables as her, And that this is the behavior of people of extreme. I mean, we're talking like Mensa level intelligence. Sometimes they don't have much of an ability to do real world tasks or like take care of themselves in that way. There's a clutter correlation with intelligence sometimes, and, you know, an inability to like take care of themselves and hyperfixations on like goals and stuff. There is also probably some relation between neurodivergency and savant levels of intelligence. And
it's just like that time you turned into numbers after drinking hazelnut coffee.
I was math. I became the numbers.
You remember in Jurassic Park when the dino DNA guy comes out?
Oh.
That's what you were.
That's 100%. That's what it felt like for 45 minutes to 60 minutes. I felt like the DNA guy from Jurassic Park.
I was dino DNA.
So, I mean, yeah. So as far as the character of Frerin goes, I think incredibly well written. There, you actually gain some sense of empathy towards something that is impossible to experience in real life. Living, I mean, besides us, of course, living for millennia, that's kind of what we do.
Right. Yeah. I've never died.
I never really died. I never was even born. I just kind of was always just kind of here. Just
sort of popped into existence.
Yeah, right.
From a different world.
We just decided to do the mic thing 4 years ago. Yeah. So that's really how it is.
Isekai'd, really.
Just world hopping from world to world. But they do this really interesting pacing thing where I don't think I've seen a show. We maybe a handful in the past year have done this pretty good. But the way that they jump between 1,000 years ago, 80 years ago, like 20 years ago, then back to 1,000, then back to 500, then back to present day, I never once felt lost, ever. I was shocked, like, because I, like, knew immediately, because they did, there was one episode, as an example, where Frerin and her teacher, Flame, who is literally the progenitor of the magic system of humanity 1,000 years ago, she's basically a myth. She's a fairy tale, but like,
and
Frerin,
she's the baddest bitch in the show.
She was the baddest bitch in the show. She is so cool. She was a absolute smoke show dime piece.
Like Mary Leona, but not as feisty.
She had some feist, though.
But not as Mary Leona.
Not as Mary Leona, no. But she basically said, "Do you remember this one demon's last words?" And then Frerin said, "No." He's like, "That's good. That's fine, because demons only use words to deceive." And then they go to a present day scene, and then they jump immediately back to that moment with that demon that they were talking about at the top of the episode. And I knew the scene I was in. Okay, I'm back at that time, because they gave us a little bit of pre-context. Whoever did the storyboarding for this anime needs to have a standing O. Just beautifully paced, beautifully placed scenes and everything. I don't know about you. I find that to be a Herculean challenge sometimes to keep that straight if you're going to start dodging around centuries willy-nilly.
Yeah, I think the reason that it's so well done is every episode they talk about where they're at. They literally have a little blurb about how many years since X event has happened.
I think the death of Himmel was kind of this stake point.
And so we have like a really good idea of where we are at present day at all times.
Yes,
I
think that's good.
They also have dropped enough like little, I guess, exposition dumps throughout the show that we know like time periods that are important to our girl. Like Frerin mentions that she was like the first mage's apprentice like a bajillion years ago. So, you know, anytime you're in that, you see her.
Yeah.
She's, you know, 500 plus years ago. But also, you know that like there's a couple scenes where Flom or whatever her name is a little bit older. And like you can kind of like put the years on her. And then there's also a couple scenes where you're hopping back to during the party going to kill the like Demon King. And so we know, okay, we're 29 years after Himmel died, and so they were 50 years before that. So like you can put it together. I think they've done enough to like leave clues for the audience. They're not like spoon feeding every episode or every scene where they're not like 800 years ago or like things like that on every scene, which I would prefer just to like make sure there's not going to be any mess.
Yeah.
But I think they've done enough of a job, and I agree with you.
I think two things on that to your point. One, I found it very unique and very clever that the onus of responsibility of telling what the age is, like what time period we're in most other shows is usually the age of our MC, right? But because our MC doesn't really age, 1,000 years ago with her master, she looked maybe 3 years younger. Like, she did look a little younger, which is, so you do still have an element that she is slowly aging, but everyone else around her is getting older or younger, depending on the time period. So you have this, as a second point, Frerin is that linchpin. She is that constant through all of these times. So any flashback that is like a thinly veiled like expo dump, like Scooby and the gang, like, oh, let's see who this real villain is. Lore dump, it's you. Oh, I would have gotten away with it too, you motherfuckers. But no, having it from her perspective at any point slotted in the history of this world and her involvement in it makes it feel very relatable, because we kind of see her reactions of remembrance. So those lore dumps are in the form of memories that are contextually tied with the present moment's thing. And then she, in that remembrance, is kind of keeping all of this stuff straight. And I love that, because I think from a storytelling perspective, it's hard to do that, but they found a clever way through the character of our MC. So loved the way they paced it. It's not easy to do what they did, and they did it with absolute pizzazz.
Yeah, another flair. Thing that they do is anytime you're looking at like the 500 to 800,000 years ago where she's with Flom, everyone's wearing like toga Roman-esque clothing, so it's pretty easy to easily like decipher where we're at time-wise then. Yeah. One thing I really enjoy is... I'm kind of moving on from that.
Sure.
One thing I really enjoy is how they kind of they delve into the idea of like the short, I guess, memory of humanity in a lot of cases.
Yeah,
where like this girl looks exactly like the fucking statues of herself in the hero's party.
Hey, you look an awful like.
But they also like don't even do that often. It's
right.
Only when she like directly is in front of the statue and she's like, "What's Ooh. Up with my statue?" They're like, "You kind of look like that little elf girl that was in the party." But I think it's really interesting because there's one scene where she's talking to basically this old guy in a village who's like, yeah, we're gonna you know, praise the hero for the next 100 years. And she's like, what about the next 1,000 years? And he's like, well, that's a lot harder to determine. I think it is interesting, like as a parallel to real life, because while like certain empires have lasted, you know, long periods of time, there are certainly some that were like big deals. Like, think of the Aztecs, but we don't really have a lot of the history, like, of the Aztecs,
yeah.
Right? Like, day-to-day life was not recorded in any meaningful way, whereas, like, Roman Empire, they spent a lot of time writing shit down, drawing, making paintings. Like, we know a lot about the Roman Empire. We know a lot about the Turks.
Yeah.
Or the Ottomans, I suppose you would say.
I find that interesting, because in this show, Frerin has always had this perception of, like, statues as being unnecessary, almost gaudy. Like, why the fuck would you do that? And again, it's another really nice subtle perception shift between humans and elves, where she would find a statue gaudy because she would probably outlive any statue because it just crumbled before she die, whereas humans have that urge to persist after death, to be remembered, because we won't be around. Like, Frerin doesn't have to be remembered. She's always there. She's literally just always there.
Right.
So
and they really delve into that. I think in quite a few occasions, they talk about similar things that you're saying to a T. And I really, really love that kind of deep dive into that concept. Because like, even if you think about it, it's really like the victor writes history in a lot
always.
Of cases for like wars. I think a lot of times of like what was lost during World War II, like such an absurd amount
of
history was lost.
Volumes.
Or the libraries of Alexandria.
What a fucking crime.
Like borderline everything that has happened before then.
Complete tangent
might not
on that.
Exist.
Did you hear that they translated that Babylonian slab and they found that they had a completely different form of trigonometry that didn't use angles to determine right triangle like dimensions, but ratios? It's a ratio-based trigonometry system that is not only, it's accurate, it's rudimentary, but it's accurate, but a completely different way of thinking. And we only just figured that shit out. 3,700 years later, some guy finally translated it.
Huh.
So to your point, that recently just happened, and it was a big deal in archaeology and in human studies. And that weirdly coincided with me watching this. I'm like, that's why humans write things down. We don't have the luxury of Freyrin's longevity. And not just remembrance, but the accumulation. That's what humans are really good at. Just building on each other. Building on ourselves. And that does, I don't know if you had anything else, but that got into another interesting point that you were kind of saying about the short memory of humans. It's also, this show's big motif is how time changes people. And it's not just humans changing their appearance, but it's also the elves and the demons' perception on what time is meant to be. For demons in this world, what people have called them, monsters that have gained the ability to speak, not necessarily communicate, but speak, they are magic obsessed. They're literally, they flop their mana out on the table as a status symbol. Like they never hide their mana. They're very proud of their magic. Demons spend their entire long lives, I wouldn't say as long as elves, but it's up there, like more than 500 years, learning a very specific type of magic. There's a character, Lord Legume or thing, Lugum? I don't know.
Something like that.
Lugum. He basically had this kind of interesting diatribe about, like, he hates geniuses because of their propensity to get things quickly. They don't appreciate the beauty of accumulation. Human beings in our short span are very good at kind of accumulating from our past generations into our future ones, and as a single mass of intelligence just progress as one big horde. Demons have the same kind of appreciation for that accumulation in this world, but they do it themselves. They just themselves. They're very individualistic that way. I found that very fascinating, kind of as a very, I wouldn't say brand new take on the idea of a demon, but it was very like a new kind of spin on their obsession with individual accumulation of study.
Right. I think it's really like almost despotism versus like a collective goal.
Yes. Yeah. And I,
but I did really want to talk about this topic you're mentioning, because yeah, they talk about, there's this whole scenario, and I mentioned a little bit, she goes back to this village that her and the Heroes Party had visited a long time ago. They were fighting one of the demon generals who had come up with this magic that was like so fucking insane at the time.
So fucking good.
So this was over 100 years ago, and it was a magic that essentially was like instant death to any humans.
I think they said it literally targets the body and bypasses defense.
Right.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, she called it almost literally armor-piercing magic in the dub.
I think in the sub they called it killing magic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this magic was essentially like KO for anybody until the Heroes Party got to them. But he was so fucking strong and so like gifted at magic, this guy, that they could not kill him at the time. They had to essentially just seal him away for 100 years and then come back later to deal with
him. I'll be back to check on your ass in a little bit, check a century later.
But what's really interesting is they took the principles that they learned from their battle and they gave them to human mages. And in 90 years, they've come up with a complete, like, whole new kind of set of magic, I guess, defenses directly of affecting the killing magic.
Right.
And also a whole new set. They like basically took all the like building blocks of this magic system.
They just remapped that shit. Yeah.
And they retooled it into a demon killing ray, essentially. And what's really interesting is later on, they have this conversation with another one of the like long lived demon generals. And they're basically like, yeah, so he was really sick and everything. But what you guys don't realize is, you know, ever since that time, we've been working on like ways to stop that magic and to retool it. And that's when that legume guy goes into like his, I hate geniuses. Wah, 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 wah. You don't enjoy like, you know, the pursuit of happiness.
The beauty of accumulated knowledge.
And they're like, bitch, accumulate this.
accumulate this bitch. But I think it could be summed up even in that scene that you were talking about when they unseal him and Fren, who is this apprentice of Frerin, basically fires off a basic blast at him. And he goes, wait a minute, that feels fucking familiar. What is the name of that spell? Thinking it's going to be Zoltrek, which is the name in the demon magic system. And she says, name? That's just ordinary offensive magic.
That's key blast, bitch.
That's literally just like default B spam. That's not B up or down, left, right. That's just B.
Exactly.
And that right there is kind of the key thing right there, is that time has these various effects in this world. To demons, it is literally the vehicle by which you accumulate and become individualistically strong, very demon-esque. For humans, it is do as much as you can in your life and pass this on to the nest, pass the torch. But for Frerin, it's funny, because she always said, oh, it was a mere 10 years. It was a mere 50 years. It was a mere 10-year journey to defeat the Demon King. But if you notice, and for those that have seen it, all of her flashbacks, all of the pivotal moments, all come from either the small time she was with Flame or Flam, and those mere 10 years she was with her party. And it's what Eisen said when she got her main quest in the show, which was, it seems those mere 10 years, that 1/100th really changed you. So I love this motif of an immortal being being changed by what she perceives as a minuscule amount of time, but it seems to be the driving force for so much of like her personal growth in the show, which is great. It wasn't like, oh, I spent 5 centuries doing X. No, you spent less than 1/100th with these people, and they're all you think about. They're all you go back to. Love that idea.
I totally agree. I think one thing that was really interesting and telling is between the years of like her 500 years old and 1,000 years old, she basically was just like a weird mage hermit, right?
She's like a forest nymph of sorts.
Right,
yeah.
And so they come to her and ask her to join their party, and she's like, I haven't done anything in my life at all. And I do think that's very interesting, because she really didn't do jack shit as far as like anything that could be discerned as like I'm helping humanity or I'm helping the world in any real way, right?
Yeah, right.
She's
right.
So dug into what she's working on that she really didn't like push anything forward haven't shown that she did anything in those 500 years.
Not
that was
in those.
Like, of note. And yeah. So I do think it's interesting, like, as a sort of like another allegory of like, when your goal is to help the world or to do something that has great ramifications, even like the smallest period of time that you're working on that can be like the most important thing you've done in your whole life.
Hell yeah.
I think about, and I don't know this like these days what the deal is, but like back in the day when people went off to do like Greenpeace stuff.
Oh, yeah.
They would, like, think about that and talk about that the rest of their life as, like, the biggest thing they ever did. Or, like, Doctors Without Borders kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. And they're saying, oh, you're that those, like, 12 months.
Right.
10 months, even 8 or 6.
Like, changed my life.
Changed your life. And, I mean, it really is kind of what you get out of it. And I think that for Frerin, like, those 10 years, she was so set in, like, what's it matter? I'm basically, like, after 1,000 years, I'm maybe 1/6 the way done with my life. And like, that was nothing. That was literally nothing to me. But she's learning how even the littlest amount of time can make the greatest amount of personal impact. And it's funny too. You see this like time thing. It's not just, they're not doing this like ham fisted, like big sweeping moments. Like, look at these motifs. It's interwoven into every little thing that she does. Earlier on, she was kind of looking for a specific flower that Himmel had talked to her about to kind of honor his grave or a statue with. It wasn't his grave, but a statue of him in a village. And this is first when she kind of took on Fran as a apprentice. They looked for that flower for 6 months. And to her, it like, Fran was like, what the fuck are we doing? Like, you know, like, I've literally been with you. I was told to be with you. And like, I'm like 12. That's 1/24th of my life. Yeah. And we did it looking for a fucking flower. And she's like, nah, it'll only be another couple of years. Like, right. It's cool. And when they went and fought the dragon, it's like, what do we do now? I guess we just keep hacking at it until we get it down. It should take 5 or 6 years, right? So, like, these little moments where it's like, she's willing to burn, like, better parts of decades just doing, like, I guess I'll just keep hacking at it until I get it. And, I mean, I found that to be sometimes more interesting than some of the big sweeping stuff because of how absolutely blasé 6 years, 7, 10 are to her, to the point where she'll burn these hours, burn this time on the most trivial shit for the most trivial reasons. And I kind of found that there's humor in that too.
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of these scenarios, she seems to lack like entirely pragmatism. But I think the point is when you have thousands of years at your disposal, your definition of what pragmatism would be has changed.
Right. What is a moment to her? Like 3 months? That's a blink. That's nothing. And she's easily willing to spend that. So you have like friend following her to the village. Like, all right, what's 4 months, right? It's like, that's a long fucking time. Like, we're going to see some right. seasons, right? I love that element of it. And that's not just Freyrin. We kept talking over and over. Every character, past and present, feels just so fleshed out and not really like overly hammed up. Some of them have hammy elements. You got, you know, Himmel the hero. He's a little bit haughty and about himself, but still genuinely cares about the people around him. He's always thinking how handsome he is. The motif is there. You have the drunk priest, Heitar, who is always drinking. And every time, like, you corrupt fucking priest, how can you say that you're going to be living, you're living a good life? You're literally fucking blitzed all the time. And he just goes, ha ha ha, drink. And he just never says anything else after that. Then you have the stone, cold, quiet, but sort of kind Eisen, who is like, I guess he looks like a dwarf. I do not believe he is a dwarf. Is he a dwarf?
I think he's a dwarf.
He's a genuine dwarf? Okay.
I think they mentioned that one little scene. The other reason you can see that is like he hasn't changed too much throughout the years either.
And I love that his kind of gimmick is that he'll kind of help Freyrin here and there when she comes and visits him, and he says, I'm too old to swing an axe and stuff, but he's still running across the water without magic. He's literally jumping over cliffs. He's picking up boulders. He is still a fucking tank beast, and he's like, oh, I'm too old,
Too old for this shit.
I'm getting too old for this shit, man. Sorry. And like, dude, you just lifted a mountain. What the fuck? Like, get over here, dude. Quit being a lazy piece of shit. But yeah, those characters all fun. And then the new brood, Fran is, I'll be honest, the weakest of them for me, but still great.
Huh.
I know your thoughts on that. I don't think there are any necessarily bad, annoying characters in this. But of all of them, Fran kind of gets under my skin a little bit. She's very like subtle tsundere, where she's like always calling Stark a perv when he's not even like all of his stuff is, yes, very stereotypical, yes, kind of played for laughs a lot, but it's never like so egregious where it's like even a misunderstanding. There's no misunderstanding here. Hey, I'll carry Freyrin. You literally carried her 3 miles in the snow, you pervert. What the fuck did I do? Like, what? I was literally trying to help.
Yeah, so I really liked the story more when Stark was injected into the cast.
I think he added the balance right. of everything,
and
yeah.
And also, like, Freyrin is so whimsical from a, like, time standpoint. She's so, like, you know, I'm doing whatever I want to do kind of thing. And Fren was in a situation where she didn't feel like, in a lot of cases, like, she had the right to even, like, say, hey, this is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
I'm not going to spend 8 years doing this.
When she got locked up for trying to attack a peace envoy.
Right.
It's like, it said you got to learn your lesson. You'll be in here for, like, 2 or 3 years. Oh, that's all? Cool. And then they go somewhere else. And then friends, like, to Stark, you don't want to stay here for 2 years. Like, hell fucking no, dude. We got to get the fuck out of here. And
right.
she's like, thank you. Someone normal. Someone that isn't weirdly crazy about time.
Well, right. So it really helps, I think, the cast move forward in a lot of cases to get that third person to really bounce like ideas off of, and also to move the plot forward in a way that we're now getting much more time focused, because it's not just like, okay, well, I'll teach Friend for the rest of her life and she'll die, but, you know, I'll still be doing what I got to do. Now it's like I'm putting together this band of, like, you know, young-esque miscreants who can't last forever, but we have a goal that we want to, you know, get to, and we're on this 10-year journey, or at least it took us 10 years to do it initially. And it is an interesting idea to, like, retrace the steps of the initial journey, but with the apprentices or the, like, loved ones of the people that she was with initially.
I was just going to say that, because this whole apprentice model, it does a couple really good things for a show like this. One, the idea of an apprentice is inherently kind of like a lofty time thing. You need the OG to have their whole arc, right, and be good enough to select a successor, an apprentice, and then they have their own arc. That kind of backing secondary cast of the OGs, then the apprentices, is completely great to have that grounding Frerin as, like, your linchpin through all this time. But two, it also really explains, in a lot of these fantasy settings of all this OP situation, all of the people that were in the OG party, they were the heroes party. They were the OGs. They were the ones that made it through. They were the original OP guys. These apprentices and Frerin. Frerin is an 1,000-plus-year-old elven mage. Amazing. Gonna be OP. And we'll talk about that OP situation in a sec, because I wanted to hit on that. But the two apprentices, one was handpicked by Hater because she showed amazing acuity in one aspect of magic, and then became Frerin's apprentice because he tricked her into it. Turns out she's kind of a baller. She's kind of a beast in her own right. But because she had probably the most powerful mage in the world as her teacher, all of that makes sense. And she's not so overpowered where it's like she claps everything. There's still challenge for her, which makes stakes and her fights fun. Then you have Stark, who draws so many parallels to Aizen's own story, coward who ran away from the village, you know, and, you know, he saw so much of himself in him and then literally punched him out of his home reflexively because of how powerful Stark became. That fight with the dragon was fucking awesome.
Like, it was sick.
It was sick as hell. But I love the balancing act with him being a wee baby scaredy boy all the time versus him being an insano, like, his own worst enemy is himself. He's stopping his own OP, I don't know, freak flag flying with his own mentality, I would say. So, like, him being a coward is the only thing stopping him from just going on a fucking tear every time.
Yeah, it's the shackles he places on himself that's holding him back, not necessarily his skills or abilities.
Everything is so balanced with these characters. It never feels like... I guess I wanted to ask you that a little bit, too. You kind of set off mic that you felt like, and this maybe we can get into Gripe Town a little bit, that Frerin being so inherently powerful that things just kind of go, I don't know if you put it, easy for her.
She never is pushed in any fight, really. I really don't think she's struggled one little bit so far. She struggles more with the human interaction than she does with fighting or with doing magical things. Even her students are pretty ridiculously OP. Her little band of children. And
band of babes.
Yeah, I think kind of an interesting idea. Like, they were obviously strong as fuck back when they killed the Demon King, obviously. But there was a team of four of them. So you can say, okay, maybe she was like 1/4 of the power.
Sure.
But that was also, like, at this point, 80 years ago. Like, she's probably gained power, like, at a consistent rate.
And we know that she's been, like, literally suppressing herself her whole life because that's, like, her teacher taught her, if you want to deceive the demons, always be suppressing your mana because they can't. They don't understand the idea of suppressing it. Why would you do that? That's insane. So
right, but my point is, like, really, she's never oppressed in any real way. In fact, she frequently will just not fight a situation. And I think it's more because she's trying to give these kids experiences than it is, like, you know, in any way, like, she's unable to do it. I don't believe that's the case so far at all. And the only reason that that's a problem is it makes it all kind of like almost like a little bit of a farce of a journey. Like, while they do have these like little problems they run into, like, I do not believe for one millisecond she couldn't have just one shot that dragon.
Oh,
if you notice, she never shot at it. She let friends shoot at it.
Yeah.
And then they just ran away. And then she also didn't do anything when what's his face was fighting her Stark. She just like kind of watched. And so it's just like a little bit like it's kind of the problem with having a character, I think, inherently that has already beaten the Demon King. Like, she's already one of the top four strongest creatures on Earth.
Yeah. And to your point, I think if and when conflicts of the natures we've seen so far arise and she is not putting this stuff down, and it's not like, well, you guys handle it because I want to train you guys, she could explicitly get the job done. Yeah, I see that being a bit of like farcical in that way. But the way I see it is that their mission this time is not at all to defeat the Demon King. That sucker's gone, I believe. I think his castle remains. I think there is some power struggle on the demon side because a lot of the sages are still around. They're just kind of scattered. Their mission here, now that we're at the very end, is that Frerin's teacher had actually left her real grimoire and notes. Her teacher, Flame, being a myth at this point, people always tote that, oh, these are the actual notes of the legendary wizard Flame. And she's like, they're fake. They're all fake. Of course they're fake. But at one point midway through the first core, she does find the real notes, and it was already open to a page where it describes that her teacher had found ostensibly this world's heaven, where the souls of those that died go to rest and live. It is in the farthest north continent, and if you travel there beyond the Demon King's castle, there you'll find essentially a place where these souls reside. And her whole journey was to try to know people better and hopefully know Himmel, the hero, better, because she regrets not doing that. She literally gets to go speak with him. So their mission is not inherently to destroy or defeat, but it is very personal. It's a personal journey. So while I think that it does not necessarily cheapen the overall goal for me, I'm still a bit in your camp where it's like, when the cool conflicts arise, will she ever actually get pushed? You know?
I don't think it's the point of the show. It isn't. So that's why I'm okay with it so far. It's just, it's hard to create a character that's this absurdly OP, and she doesn't seem to have like issues killing demons. Like, that would be the other piece of the puzzle, right? So for example, a character in media that's really OP that has like self-imposed restrictions would be Superman.
There you go. Yeah,
he is basically invincible to everything and can kill anything.
Yep.
But he doesn't want to like wantonly kill things. He doesn't want any like collateral damage, things like that, right? Whereas I haven't seen her with really any compunctions one way or the other as to whether she's going to kill something, right? They could have played with the demon thing a little bit, but then they give us the backstory where demons wiped out, like, a lot of the fucking elves, and so she's like, I fucking ate them. And they literally call her Frerin the Demon Slayer, and it's like, holy fuck, that was so metal.
I love that, like, there still is change in her. That's the personal journey, right? Before, back when they get the flashback of the first time that they tried to fight Aura, she was throwing fucking key beams and shit left and right, but she was scolded by Himmel because in that fight, she was destroying the puppets of the bodies of fallen northern soldiers, disrespecting their efforts and their loss. Now, in this next up, 80 years later, she's quietly dispelling the magic and letting them rest. Very interesting that she's I think it's like, I love the retreading because it's not the same Frerin.
Right. She's reevaluating her past actions and seeing what she could have done differently. I don't agree with the sentiment whatsoever. I think if she needs to just kill this thing, she should kill this thing, and whatever method is necessary in this case. But I do like that they've showed that she is trying to think about how humans are, you know, emotionally tied to like short spans of life, right? The other thing I wanted to say is I think Himmel was into her, or she was into him and just doesn't realize it.
He was into her, and we did get actual lines out of his mouth. Because remember the little thing in the village when that old man as a kid flipped her skirt up?
Right.
And then he's like, what the fuck, kid? That's what I've been wanting to do this whole goddamn time, you little bitch. Get back here.
He's like, but I have self-respect, or like,
Yeah, but I'm a fucking hero and I gotta be that kind of guy.
Right, right.
But yeah, and I think Freyrin liked him, but didn't really show it all that well, or didn't even know it, because
right,
they
but
do.
But now
have,
I think she realizes she liked him.
She liked him. And I think we did get that very interesting line that makes complete sense. Great world building writing is that because of elves' longevity and our devotion to magic and study, romantic relationships and procreation for us is rarely on our mind, or it's mostly an afterthought. If that, we're quietly extincting ourselves. Loved that. Like, that's part of it. We did get some more stuff about the demons killing the elves.
Sounds like the Japanese, am I right? Awkward. Anyway, I did want to say, I think the art style is almost Disney-esque in its color. Like,
oh my,
like,
God.
I felt like I was watching Bambi for a lot of it.
Bambi.
As far as like the hues of the like greens and yellows and blues.
The backdrops and the paint strokes. Just, chef's kiss. This is a feast for the eyes. Madhouse spared no expense. Madhouse doesn't do shit lightly. So for them to take this on and do it in this way, there are people online in a lot of the comments on Crunchyroll. Yes, I actually read that cesspool bullshit. But some of them are like, I read the manga a couple times. There are things in here that completely elevate this way beyond the manga, way beyond. And I'd have to agree even without reading it. I mean, it's beautiful. It is a feast for the eyes in its slowest moments. And when it finally picks up, they fucking go hard. I mean, if they did some 3D, I couldn't tell. There are maybe a couple scenes, but I think they had that, like, the guy who, like, animated some Jujutsu Kaisen, some Mob Psycho. It's killing me. I shouldn't know that name, but it was very much his style, that watercolor style, that it didn't look 2D to me. It just looked like a lot of love and care. It was just great. Just three kiss.
I think if you want to watch something that is fantasy, it is well drawn, it's well set up, the characters aren't offensive in any way. Essentially, if you want to watch like a non, what's that fucking show called that you love that's terrible?
The show that I love? You got to be a little more specific, my guy.
Not really. It's the only one I've ever like given you shit for.
Fucking Jobless Reincarnation?
Yeah. If you want to watch that without like the unnecessary harem, I really think this has a lot of parallels.
Yes.
But like takes all the bad shit that you could possibly say about Jobless and does not have that.
There is not a minutia of fan service in this show. Like not a lick. And even for the baddie that is Flame.
Yeah.
Flame. None to speak of. Nary a cleavage. I think maybe Aura's got a little bit of that, but other than that. Nah, we're good here, fam. This is a wholesome ass fucking show.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's very, very wholesome. There's no like, there's nothing that you have to like necessarily really worry about from a concept standpoint.
It's basically living in PG. I mean, there's a couple scenes where like Freyrin buys a bottle of potion that dissolves only clothes, but they don't show a single lick of nudity. But they basically, like, she was told to get rid of it. She keeps it for, like, 5 years. And then she wants to give it to Stark on his 18th birthday. It's like, I was told by my master that men love this sort of thing. That's probably the dirtiest joke in this whole show. Oh, they do have the clouds that look like boobies. Other than that, that's it.
Yeah, what I mean is, like, people praise Jobless Reincarnation for the art. They praise it for the world. They praise it for the art.
The aesthetic is very close to Jobless.
I think this does all of that without having that kind of like grimy undertone of like the sick shit that goes on in the Jobless Reincarnation world. Right? Like, think about it. In a fantasy world without slaves, like, that is honestly getting to be like a weird anomaly.
Yeah. I mean,
you know what I mean? Like, think about fucking Shield Hero.
You got Shield Hero. You got Labyrinth in Another World. You got.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. And you have. The Spice and Wolf isn't really. No, there's like no slavery. There's probably slavery in the background. I don't know. I haven't seen Spice and Wolf. Hate me on the Discord. I don't care.
I think a crazy thing to do is bring up a show you haven't watched.
Well, look. There, slavery in fantasy world is so ubiquitous.
Right.
I would not be surprised if someone's like, I hate that you haven't seen it because it's a fucking great show. But yeah, there's slavery. Like,
right.
I'm hedging a bet there. I don't know.
All I'm saying is all the grimy shit that they've like edgelorded and put into Jobless is not there.
That is removed. Yes. I would, dare I say, this is kid friendly. I would say this is kid friendly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You got a little blood here and there. You got a little bit of, you got a, like a little innuendo there, here and there. No more than a dang, like, I don't know, PG movie. Like, that's it. You're good. But yeah, my final thought, this could be, I actually went back and looked at the stuff we watched to try to remove recency bias. This is going to probably go down in the top five for me in 2023. Do I say it's the best one for me? Debatable. But again, just like I said up top, I think this has a seat at the table for sure.
Yeah, at minimum, it's a nomination.
It's a nom. It's a hard nom. And in that vein, I'm going to give it a 92.
I'm going to give it a 90 flat.
90 flat. Okay, that's what I'm saying. I feel like it'd be criminal to call this anything less than a 90. It is a masterpiece in its own right.
Of course, we've only watched the first half of season one.
But something tells me that trajectory is just, like, this is one of those ones, like, it has the JJK effect for me where I'll, like...
I'm just leaving the door open for a potentially higher than 90.
I love that. Fair enough. And, like, I'll literally, like, okay, and next episode, start, and end credits? What happened? I thought I just started it. Okay, let's do the next one, and end credits? What, and I look at my phone, and it's, like, 2 hours later. I'm like, God damn it. Holy shit. How did they write another 3-second episode? That's so crazy that they did that.
Yeah, it's an interesting, I think, juxtaposition with, what was it, Pluto, because it's an hour to 20 minutes.
Yeah, right.
And you really do feel that, like, difference in, you know, three times the length.
Yeah, right. But also, then again, you're also cracking these off at, like, 3 times the speed.
2 times speed. 3 times is like it'll skip too much and you literally can't hear anything. One really interesting phenomenon that I don't want to say enjoy, but I really enjoy thinking about or like trying to wrap my head around is if you listen to things at 2 times speed and then you go back to 1 time speed, it sounds like people are talking so slow.
It's almost like your brain is like you're getting so accustomed to that speed that then when you come back down and waning off of that level of like information dump and you're like, it's too fucking slow. And it's like, that's normal speed, my guy. Like
it sounds like they are dragging everything out so absurdly long when you go back to 1 time speed.
Ethan's fucking speed racer over here.
I do really think, I mean, I listen to audiobooks at least on 1.6, but typically 1.7 plus times speed. I just think that in this case, especially, I am concerned that if I watched it at 1 time speed, I would be really bored because there was so much shit that was like, you know, panning view of beautiful thing. And while that's fine, like every now and then, it's every single episode. And so at 2 times speed, this was a brisk, beautiful walk through this world. At 1 time speed, I'm concerned I would be like, holy fuck, do something.
I thought about trying to find my way to do 2 times speed because I did some of that for Pluto. But after the first episode, every one of those slow beats felt so meticulously purposeful. Like it was purpose driven. And then you had some fights, some faster moments. It just, everything was placed so with so much purpose. Like, whether you maybe think that the pacing was too slow for your liking or not, it's undeniable that it was very thoughtful. Like, it was not done so to waste time or save budget. Like, everything was there for a reason. And the things that were there, the slow panning shots, painted beautifully with so much love.
Well, I do think they are purposeful to show you like even the 6 month period looks like nothing to her.
Yeah, right. Right.
But I am maybe so high strung these days that, you know, watching 6+ hours of the show and getting only like maybe an hour of like actual action, which I would struggle.
I'm not here for that. Not here for the action. I'm here for the beauty.
I liked the beauty. Yeah. I just also liked it at two times speed.
I was going to say, I liked the beauty at two times speed.
Twice as fast.
But you know what? Thank you guys for coming to this very beautiful, serene class about time delineated mortal beings, I guess, of ourselves sometimes as well. Who cares? So we're not gloating or anything. We've just been here for 2000 millennia.
We're not gloating or anything, Baka.
Baka. But if you'd like to talk about the Frere and Beyond Journey's End, or maybe what you think, we're getting to the end of the year, what you think might be your anime of the year, come into the Discord, patreon.com/ubology. Just $1 and up gets you into that Discord with all the lovely Patreon folk and our past guests. If you want to give us a little more love, give us, say hi. If you want to go talk to us, or give us a like, comment, subscribe, anywhere you do those things, maybe check out a little bit of merch on the side at Weebology.com. All of the links are there. All the merch is there. And if you would like to listen to anything else we've done, you're on a platform, guys. I say it every week, over and down, over 235 hours of content at your fingers, at your fingertips. You have the world of anime at your fingertips. Do it. I can't, you know what? 2024 might be angry Professor Ricky again. I might come full circle.
If you're weaning off of caffeine, I think it's probably best to just be chill.
I'm starting, it's a little grating, dude. Weirdly enough, caffeine kept me like focused and like chill. Without it, I'm like.
That's kind of like the opposite of what's supposed to happen.
Yeah, my physiology's a little odd, man. It's a little odd.
Interesting fact, One Piece is now the second best-selling comic of all time from an IP perspective.
Behind
Superman, but it's only 40 million copies or something like that behind it. And at this trajectory, it will pass it, certainly, because it's only been around since, I don't know, like 80s.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh, wow.
Superman's been around since like the fucking 20s.
Yeah, right.
But it has passed Spider-Man, Batman, like all these big boys.
Get clapped, Marvel. Get clapped, DC. Oda did you in. Get out.
Suck on anime's big, fat, veiny finger.
Finger, yeah. But until it can stick that clock down the throat of every other comic IP in the world,
God.
I'm Ricky.
And I'm Ethan.
And this has been Weebology.
Deuces. That was so aggressive.